Hey everyone,
I'm Emily.
And I'm Maria, and this is the Open Plan Podcast. We're excited to have you here.
Join us in navigating life in architecture as young professionals tackling career, education, social lives, and everything in between.
Keep up with us on Instagram at Open Plan Podcast. So now let's get into it. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Open Plan Podcast.
Hi, everyone. We're so excited to have you. Welcome back.
We have a really exciting and highly requested episode today. But if you don't want to wait for episodes to come out and you want to know what we're up to, you can keep up with us on Instagram at Open Plan Podcast. In the meantime, between episodes, we have a lot of fun there and we answer your questions and we love to communicate with our community through there. So without further ado, we have a big episode today. We're talking about international students. I am from Brazil myself. I came to Georgia Tech for college in 2014 as an international student. And throughout my almost 10 years here, oh my God, I can't believe it's been 10 years. I get a lot of questions from current international students asking for help, a lot of Brazilian students asking me how to even apply and all that stuff. And especially with the new NCARB accommodations for ESL students recently and just increasing number of international students pursuing architecture, we thought, why not make this episode, kind of put everything on record that I can to help. And at the end, we'll some of the questions we got on Instagram. So, and we'll try to do some timestamps on this description too, because I think, like, if you're already in college, you don't care about pre-college stuff. So we want to make this really helpful.
Yeah, sounds great. I can't wait to get into it because I think it's a journey that we don't talk about that often, but so many people are going through it. We're going to do it in order. So from the very beginning, Maria, tell us, take us back to 17-year-old Maria and her thought process. And so I guess this phase would be the before college and everything you did to get to the US, essentially.
Yeah. So I think in any case, like, you should want to come to the US, whether that's definitely something that needs to come from you, because otherwise you're not going to have the strength to get through all of this stuff. So first of all, make sure that's something that you want to do. But that's something that I was considering because I had lived in Michigan before. So I was familiar. I was a child. I was like in sixth grade, but I learned English and I learned about the culture and I did school. So I was familiar with what I was getting into in some sense. So it was something that was attractive to me to, like, go to a different country, go to school there. And mostly, like, I was very excited to get away from where I was living at.
That's relatable to people, like, in the US too.
Yeah. Like, hometown. I want to go, yeah, definitely, you know, my city was small, so there weren't a lot of school options there. So either way, I was going to have to move at least an hour away. So I just decided to move, like, a 9-hour flight away. So it's fine. How I went about it, which I would recommend, obviously, because it worked out for me, but it depends on what kind of person you are. But I applied to both Brazilian colleges and US colleges because I was thinking, you know, it wasn't a one and done, like, I need to go to the US. It was like, if I get in and it works out, I'll go, but there's good schools in Brazil too, and I'll apply to those as well.
So I did put all your eggs in, like, one basket type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, my family was like, and I think it would have been cheaper in Brazil, especially because the public schools are free. They're hard to get into, but they're free.
College?
So that's a huge,
gosh,
huge cost difference, right? To then come to the US. But the US had a lot more opportunities of jobs and higher pay and better education in some senses. So it was a balance. But what I did for the US schools is I did a lot of research on, I knew I wanted to do architecture already. So I did a lot of research on their programs, which schools even had architecture, because obviously we knew about the big famous ones, but some of them don't even have architecture. And I had lived in Michigan, so I knew some other Michigan schools, and, you know, I started there kind of, but it was mostly like on, I think it was College Board at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's still around, but yeah, just like researching, yeah, scores for each degree and if it was the 4-year or the 5-year, I started understanding what that meant. And I was very realistic about it. I had maybe like 5 schools on my list, and it went down to 2 that I actually applied to, because it was a cost thing. Like, if you can afford it, or it's like, I'm not going to get into MIT or Harvard. Like, and if I get in, I can't afford it. So like, it's not realistic. I didn't have a portfolio. I didn't have extracurriculars. Like, I was, my Brazilian high school was very lean. Like, it was the minimum. It was a great school with the minimum that we had. So I knew I was competing with like super diverse pool of students here.
Side note, I wonder how many architecture students actually applied with a portfolio, because I didn't.
To undergrad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just like, what is that?
I think there's some high schools, like we had a few friends in school that in high school they had architecture classes.
We've talked about this advantage.
They're on a different level. Yeah. Like that's, but I think they understand that in college admissions too. They take into consideration what you had available,
right,
to do. But anyway, I was really like, I prioritized as much as I could. And I only applied to schools that I would actually go to. So what's the point of getting into a school, going through all this trouble, if you're not even going to go? Like, if you get in, you're not going to go. It's dumb. But but I know it's different here for American students. I feel like they apply to way more.
Yeah, but I think in the same way, like, applications have fees here, and it's like, a lot of the times you could get them waived for something, like they'll have like a random promotion, like this month it's free, or like you could get a scholarship. You
do it early,
But no, I think that makes total sense that, unless it's like a disposable thing to you, like, you know, to just, you know, throw whatever. Yeah. I don't even know what the cost of applications are now. Like, back then it was, you know, when we were applying, it's probably like at least like $50 to $100. So
yeah, I was going to say like $200 maybe.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I don't know.
So yeah, no, but that makes sense to be selective. I think so.
Yeah. And then that means you have more time to put towards those things and in turn, potentially a better result. Another important thing is financial planning. So in any case, I think any other country that you're coming from, your currency is probably weaker than the dollar. So it's expensive, right? And it's hard to know how much you're going to spend. So I think being very realistic about that and looking into, obviously, the tuition costs and the housing costs and how much you're going to spend on food and kind of mocking that up ahead of time is a good idea. I think that we definitely did that as a family when I was applying. And especially once I got in, we were like, okay, let's see if this can actually work. and at the time, it worked because the currency exchange rate in Brazil was only 1 to 2. But it didn't stay that way. So keep in mind, college is 4 years or 5 or more. And that might not be the case the whole time. There might be political things or whatever, economic downturns and COVID. I don't know what could happen, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's definitely like something to keep in mind. I think we, as a family, decided that, you know, when I started, it was going to work out. But then when Brazil started going down, like economically, and like our currency doubled, so basically the cost of school doubled, I started looking into every possible, well, from the beginning, I started looking into every possible way to reduce costs. So there's very few scholarship opportunities for international students once you're at school. Everything is like state-based or loans and everything. We are not eligible for any of that. So there's a bunch of, I'll get into that once we get into the, when you're actually in college part, but There's a lot of stuff from your own country that you can look into. Brazil had a few. I didn't apply to any of them because most of them had, they would force you to come back to Brazil to work. Mm. So it's like, oh, we're investing, we're giving you money to go study abroad, but then you come back and put that back into the country kind of thing.
Right, right.
So that wasn't, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do 4 years after that. Like, I didn't have any plans, but I knew I didn't want to come back. So I
commit to that so early, right?
Yeah. So the student visa also is another thing you're gonna have to do. Once you get in, the school will give you everything you need, and then you'll go get your student visa with all the school admission documentation, medical records, blah 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 blah. My recommendation is just to start early with everything, with applying, with selecting your schools, with looking at the requirements, because they all have different deadlines. I knew I had a huge spreadsheet of like contact information, who to email, and when was due, what were the requirements for each school. And that's kind of how I narrowed it down. Like, if there was a school I wanted to apply to, but it had like triple the amount of requirements to submit, I was like, nah, that's not it.
Okay. So the requirements and documentation happens not after you get into the school. You have to submit with your application. Okay.
Well, some is when you submit, and then some of it is once you get in before you accept, right? Okay. Like, I had, I got accepted, and then I think I had a month to, or 2 weeks or something, to tell them, oh, I'm coming. Mm-hmm. And then that's also another time where you have to send them a bunch of stuff. Okay. And then once it's all settled, they send you everything you need to prove that you are attending the school. And there's a lot of financial things, like you have to prove to them that you can pay. So if you're not the one paying, you have to have a letter from your parents or whoever is helping pay, or your bank, you know, all those things. You have to prove that you can pay for it.
Right.
That's kind of the basis. Yeah. And then with that, then you go apply for the student visa with all that stuff from the school saying, yep, they have the money, they have the credentials, they have a spot here, they're coming to study. They're not coming to shoot the shit. But in any case, start early from the beginning, because it's a long process and you don't want to miss any deadlines, because that's it. And this is kind of niche, but this is something that we did for me, and I highly recommend so that you're not caught in anything, but setting up a power of attorney on your behalf back home. If anything happens, like your parents sell their house or like whatever, you know, random things that can happen that they might need your signature on, or whatever. It could be anything, honestly. Just do it. Just like let your mom sign for you for something, like it in any case, just so that you don't have to fly back home, because that is a terrible time.
Right.
Like if you are required to be home for some random thing. Yeah. Sometimes flying home is very far and expensive, so you don't need to do that.
Yeah, it's not a very casual thing to do for
now.
Yeah.
One more thing. I didn't get to do any college tours. If you're able to come, that's amazing, but we didn't. So I just I looked up everything possible online on their website. I went on Street View. I remember being on Street View at Georgia Tech so many hours.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, like this is their frat row, these are the dorms, and that's the gym.
Yeah.
Like I was very familiar with how the campus looked.
That's good.
And it was very nice to at least do that because I wasn't able to visit.
Mm-hmm. And I think we might have touched on this in another episode, but you know, in the same way, like you could probably reach out to an ambassador or someone who goes to the school and have like a direct conversation with them. Which honestly, you know, going to the campus is very important, but getting a firsthand experience from someone, you know.
Yeah.
Just as
important. We have, this is very like international student specific, but we have a lot of good recs on our undergrad episode way back. It's an old one, but it's good. It has a lot of good stuff in it. But yeah, this is more like specific, but those general recommendations still apply.
Yeah. So now you're in college. Wow. You made it there. After all the paperwork, all the hoops, you made it to campus. What, as an international student, you know, in a new country, new environment for so many people, new language, what do you do when you get to college?
So I would recommend arriving a few weeks, 1 or 2 weeks before classes start. And I had to do that anyway because I had to do orientation. So it was already a little bit earlier. But you need those few days to kind of get settled. Things like setting up bank accounts, the infamous Target run to get towels and sheets and everything.
Oh my gosh, I remember that. Or Bed Bath & Beyond.
You don't have anything. It's similar to any out-of-state student too. Like you're not bringing, you're bringing two big suitcases like max. Right. So you're not bringing your towels and so yeah, you have to go do all those things. Make sure you have your health insurance set up as soon as you can. I know, I think I had like travel health insurance in the meantime before I set it up with Georgia Tech. So usually it's through the school. So make sure you know where the doctor is and you have it all set up. And get familiar with the campus, find the grocery stores, like where you, how you're going to get there, you know, figure out the bus system if there is one and how it can take you. Like we had a weekend bus that took you to the grocery store that I took freshman year all the time. So figure it out before classes start, before things get really busy.
Right.
Oh, also the like mailing system. I don't know how it is in other schools, but Georgia Tech had like PO boxes and a package room. And how do you order stuff? Like, cause you can't, if you don't have a car, Amazon's going to help you out a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, figure that out.
Honestly, Amazon is amazing for kids in school nowadays. Cause I didn't actually have that. I'm so old.
I think it existed. I'm sure it existed.
It didn't get big until,
but I didn't really use it because I didn't have a lot of like disposable cash.
Right.
So it was basically like just for groceries. So I, you know, my roommate was buying, you know, an outfit for a party that weekend on Amazon. And I'm like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just think I didn't use it at all. It's definitely helpful, especially like you could buy food on there, you know? And,
I know. I mean, it would have saved me like the Target run, I guess, get like actually going and getting things delivered. I never thought about how much easier that would be, but it's fine. It's all part of the experience to go there.
Yeah. And I was very lucky that my mom came with me that first few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone can come with you, that would be super helpful. You can get a rental car and like do everything. Or if you have a friend or some family friends, or I had a few like Brazilian moms here in Atlanta that helped me out too.
Take you under their wing a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in general, just bring every document you can possibly think about, like birth certificate, like everything from vaccination records. Oh my gosh. Everything. And everything that you have that you may need for your parents as well. Like if your parents are helping you pay for it, everything that they have, the letters, the bank accounts, blah, 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 blah. Everything. So bring everything. And then you're going to have to do the vaccination requirements. I had to take a couple of vaccines when I arrived because it was required to register for classes. So, speaking of classes, I made the mistake of putting too many classes in my first semester because it's different here. In Brazil, it's like you have a full day of classes or a full like morning of classes, even in college. It's just class, 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 and then you're done. So you have most of the afternoon, at least the one I started at. So I was like, oh, I'll just like, you know, pack them in the morning and be done by like 2 and then I'll do everything after that. And then I can go to the gym. I can, you know,
right,
blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't work that way because each class is in a different spot on campus. And I didn't account for lunch, and I didn't account for hours and hours and hours of homework outside from class.
Right.
So I think I took like 18 credits my first semester.
And on top of that, you're in architecture school.
Yeah, and it's like the first semester. I was like, what am I doing? So don't do that.
And studio itself is like 4 hours. So
Especially if you're in architecture. And like it was, if it was all architecture classes, it might have been okay. But it was like calculus, physics, English,
history.
I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
So it's terrible, 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 horrible idea. Like I would recommend taking, you know, whatever, 13, 15 credits, like the normal amount. Mm-hmm. And really think about timing. Are you going to have time to go to the food hall to get lunch? I didn't. So I had to go to the student center and spend money instead because, it was a mess. And okay. And then another recommendation I have is to get involved in other stuff. Like if there's something that you are used to doing, like if you're a dancer or if you're a swimmer or you go to the gym a lot, like keep doing those things. Try to find your crew. I was a dancer and I went to the gym a lot, but I didn't really like the dance club at Tech. So I just started going to the gym and I found the Brazilians and hung out with them. But I would recommend also hanging out with people from other countries and not, you know, don't come here and just keep talking in your native language.
I mean, I don't blame you, but
it definitely, like, I didn't at first. Like, I made a couple of friends on Facebook, like a Georgia Tech class of whatever Facebook group. And they were from like Guatemala and Ecuador and some other countries. So we became friends, and then those were my first friends, but we just talked in English, which was great.
Right.
And then it took me a little bit to like actually go and hang out with the Brazilians because I was like, I'm not gonna go hang out with the Brazilians yet. Like, I'm cool. I don't need
they you know, can stay whatever. Away.
But then I went and I was like, oh, I miss Brazil.
So familiar. But you know, that's a good balance of having like elements of home that comfort you, because in the end you are in a, you know, really honestly stressful environment. Like college itself is really stressful. You know, I can't even relate that I was out of state and I was stressed out a year out of country. So it's like, you know, I think be easy on yourself if you do lean on, you know, finding people who speak your language or, you know, but you know, if you want to stay here long term, you know, try out other things to really make U.S. elements feel like home, you know, things like
that. Yeah, definitely. And I think like there's benefits to both. Like once I started hanging out with the Brazilians, they weren't in architecture, but they were still going through all this international student stuff. So they were my go-to people of like, how are you doing your taxes? Did you get this thing, this notice? Or like, I have an account hold because of vaccination. Do you have this before? How do you get through this? Mm-hmm. So, and they were in different grades, right? So like I was a freshman and most of them weren't. So it was really nice to kind of have that support system as well.
Right. But
at the same time, hanging out with architecture kids and, you know, my dorm friends and expanding my horizon. Like my roommate had a car and she took me to Trader Joe's. I was like, wow, the Brazilians don't do that.
Find your friend for everything, your Trader Joe's friend.
Yeah. Find a friend with a car.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Freshman year when we were going like architecture supply shopping, especially. Oh, I was like looking for a car. Oh man.
Running
before
around
Uber too. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Well, that was really great advice. And you know, along those lines, you touched on a couple hacks, but we would like to know, what did you do to reduce costs when you were abroad? Because as you know, it's very expensive for international students to be abroad, not only the exchange rate, but all the additional things you're doing to assimilate here. So what did you do to reduce costs when you were on campus?
I think I'm an expert on this.
You are very good at this. You like hack the system.
I did.
I remember talking to Maria about it and I was like, whoa, oh my gosh, like she knew how to, you know, she'll get into it. RA job.
I think I paid, I might have paid less than some in-state students. No, yeah. Maybe not.
You're a guru.
Less than some out-of-state students for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, technically, right, you can't work outside the campus, but you can work on campus with a student visa. You can work for other professors. So like you can be a research assistant, you can be a TA, you can do all those things. You can work at the gym, at the student center, you can work in the residence halls, like anything. It's hard to do that in your first year, especially in your first semester. It's pretty much impossible. But once you get there, start researching the best jobs that will fit your schedule and your kind of your type of degree, right? So like architecture was very time consuming during the week and even the weekend. So like I needed something flexible, something that I could work at the same time.
Yeah. Like
work on studio stuff.
Those are the best types of on-campus jobs.
Yeah. So I was an RA in the dorms as soon as my sophomore year. That was a very hard job to get. It was like the most coveted job on campus because you get free housing. You literally don't pay for housing. Housing was at least $4,000 per semester. So that's $8,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Just scratch that off completely.
Yeah.
So it was like a long application process. There were interviews and like these little test things that they did. Because there were so many students that wanted those jobs and they needed a lot of them too. So it was like a kind of like a big recruiting process. Mm-hmm. Then once you get the job, there's like a week of training before school starts. So it was a little bit of a like intense like onboarding, but that all of that happens when you're not taking classes yet. So it's all before or it's in the summer. Like I just had to come back from summer like a week earlier too. So it wasn't like a big commitment during the semester. And how it works is essentially like in my dorm, there were two per floor. So we had three floors. So there were six of us in one building and we were part of a staff with three buildings. So we were just like keeping the order in our floor just in general. And then you would be on duty maybe like two or three nights a month. And what that means is you have this backpack with like all the stuff and you have the duty phone. And if something happens, people call you. Like if there's a fire alarm, you know, you have to like talk to the firefighters. And, like,
yeah, you're like, please let nothing happen in these 2 to 3 days.
Exactly. And they're not consecutive. Like you schedule them out. Like you can do.
But honestly, that's not bad.
It's really not bad.
Yeah, no.
It was like maybe one or two times that was like, oh my gosh, like this is a busy night.
Like, right.
You could like work on holidays and you get paid extra.
Oh.
So I think not only you get free housing, you get a stipend, you get a discounted like food hall pass.
Right. What's your like night shift hours though? Like from what time to what time? Oh, is it like an all-nighter situation? Question.
Yeah, it's like from 9 to 7 a.m. or something.
Okay.
It's overnight. But you can sleep.
Yes.
So I just, when I was on duty, I just was working, you know, on studio stuff in my dorm. I just had to be in the dorm. Okay. And you get a call. Honestly, 90% of it were people getting locked out of their rooms.
Oh my gosh.
Literally. Okay. And then you have like a master key or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you have to go let them in.
Okay.
It's fine. It really wasn't bad. And it was a great cost reducing job because, you got like a medium level food pass, meal plan. That's what they're called. Oh my God. I'm forgetting all those things.
I'm like, good for you for remembering these phrases.
Meal plan, a stipend, and and if you worked on holidays, you straight up get like like a $50 or $75, you know, addition to your stipend or something. Right. like Thanksgiving and stuff. So I highly recommend that, but it's hard to get that job. So another other few jobs that my friends had that were pretty good paid. Lifeguard was another top job. It was like $15 an hour, which is great for college. You know, that's what you're getting the architecture internship.
Oh my gosh. No.
Rip. But yeah, lifeguard was great because, you know, you had to do some training, but otherwise it's pretty chill, flexible hours too. You can pick whenever you're free. Student center, you know, in the food hall or in the like little reception food student center thing, mm-hmm. and coffee shops on campus all were pretty flexible and decently paid. And if it was slow, you could just be doing your reading or homework or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I remember like people working at the gym front desk, they were always doing homework when I tried to talk to them.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that was the best. I wanted the gym job. I ended up working at the architecture school, which was also amazing. I worked just like as a secretary's assistant, and it was nice because you're in the same building and you could just like run to studio after.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's a great, that's another great option. Like working in more like administrative, mm-hmm. in the school.
Yeah. And you kind of like network were, like, with professors.
Photographer, mm-hmm. right?
Like, oh yeah, the photographer.
Or like helping with the events. Yeah, definitely.
There's so many things. You just, a lot of it is really word of mouth though. Like if you just look online a lot, I feel like, I think I got my job just by asking like a professor, like, do you guys need help with anything at the architecture school? And he kind of connected, mm-hmm. me with like the marketing person or whatever. So don't be afraid to, you know, actually ask people in person.
Yeah.
So
I know that for in grad school, we definitely asked for all of our TA positions.
Yeah. Yeah. Such a formal,
like, please give it to me.
We literally sat in a chair and asked.
Wait, there was one more thing I was gonna say. Oh yeah, so getting a job is obviously great to reduce costs, but it's also how you get your social security number. Mm-hmm. I didn't have one, and the only way you can apply to get one is if you are going to work. So it's great to have that already once you start working in your actual field, like your internships and stuff, you already have that. It's one less thing to do. And then another thing that we had at Georgia Tech, and I'm sure other schools have it, tuition waiver applications and opportunities. So at Georgia Tech, there was an out-of-state tuition waiver, which basically cut the tuition in half for me because out-of-state tuition, mm-hmm. was pretty much double.
Right.
And I was able to do it for at least 3 or 4 semesters, which that's like half the school time
that you're receiving in-state tuition. That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's a bunch of reasons you can give them to justify getting the waiver. And one of them was obviously the Brazilian currency, like doubling. So, mm-hmm. essentially it didn't reduce costs because it cut it in half, but it had already doubled. So, but for Georgia Tech, it cut in half. Okay. So things like that, or anything related to like who is helping you pay for school or family, illness or death or something like that. So anything that happens that's making it difficult to pay something that you had planned ahead of time, mm-hmm. that you thought was going to work out, but something changed.
Right.
Those are, relevant reasons. And any scholarships, I mean, they are very few and far between, but anything that you can find is a bonus.
Wow. So wait, I guess you covered pretty much everything for college, the college phase of the episode. So, you know, once you've made it through college, took a lot of Maria's tips, saved a lot of money, you're in the phase of applying for jobs, which from an outside perspective, you know, I think in seeing it through your experience, a lot of other people's experience, a very stressful time. You want to stay in the U.S. You've worked so hard through college. It's kind of the next phase of your career. So we, you know, receive a lot of questions from listeners also, like for specific to international students, tips for applying to jobs, because as Maria will get into it, you want to stand out. You want to, at the same time negotiate for yourself, because I think there's a stigma that, or from on an employer's end, that they'll try to give a lesser salary to people with international students to take advantage of them, which is so horrible and ridiculous. So let's talk about how you would advocate for yourself, what you did, you know, when applying for jobs, things like that.
It's just a whole different ballgame. And I think I had that in my head the whole time. And I'm pretty sure most international students know that. We are just in a different category and we have to do things a little bit different. So in general terms, an international student getting a sponsorship to work somewhere means that the firm hiring, they have to justify by saying, we could not find an American that has this skill set. So we need to hire an international student. Please give me a visa for them. That's the
like bare bones, like,
logistics of it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really work that way, obviously. They're not going to interview every single American and say, we couldn't find anyone.
Right. But they got to say it. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's how you justify the visa. So in my head, I put it in my head that I had to be better than all the American students, right, who would be applying for the same internships and jobs. But obviously that's not like a, you know, black and white thing, but it just helped me in my brain kind of mentally prepare and stay motivated and confident. And I was like, I'm doing the best. I'm the best that I can be right now with what I have. And I deserve to be considered equally, right? Or even more. I was like, I'm trying to spin the fact that I'm international, that I'm, you know, more, I have a diverse background and I have different upbringing and things like that.
Yeah.
I was trying to spin all that stuff to be something good, right? Like something that would make me better.
No, I mean, like you got to take advantage, and you're being honest about how this upbringing is helping you in your career. So why not? I mean, people emphasize all their strengths. So
yeah. As an international student applying for jobs, you need to have your shit together. There's no other way of saying this. You can't afford to make dumb mistakes, not following up after networking and not having your resume completely perfect and portfolio and just doing everything possible to put your best foot forward and being proactive about all the stuff that is extra because you're international, essentially. From my experience, we're the ones that are most familiar with our situation, right? Like, no one knows this better than we do. So firm principals and architects and hiring staff, they're usually scared or turned off because they're not familiar with it. If they know this, then that's rare. Like, I have maybe 1 out of 10 recruiters and firms that I've ever talked to actually knew what I was talking about. So in general, they're not familiar and they're kind of turned off. So it's our job to make sure they understand the whole situation and what matters to them before they can make a final decision. I would always kind of explain what they needed to know from their perspective, and we don't need to explain the whole situation to them because that's just scary and kind of like, you know,
overwhelming. Yeah.
So explain what actually matters. So for example, international students don't need any additional work visa or work permit to work for a firm during a summer internship while they're students. Even as if you work part-time during the semester and you're taking classes, there's no fee, there's no visa, there's no sponsorship. Like, you can do whatever. At the same way you can work on campus, you can work in your field that's related to your degree. But many employers don't want to hire international students for internships because they think it requires fees and extra visas and whatever. So all that you need to do is, there's like some paperwork because you basically, it's like a training program that you have to fill out, but most of it can be done by you, and 90% of it is between you and Georgia Tech or you and your school. So all they need to do is sign it. That's basically it. So just keep that in mind and be very transparent about that stuff, because it can really limit your opportunities if people are turned off by that and they don't understand that you can work from them doing school and that you're familiar with the process and you know what's going on. So if you come off like you don't know what's going on, they're going to be even more scared. Mm-hmm. So just have your shit together, know everything back and forth, upside down, and just, we can't afford to make dumb mistakes. That's kind of what I put in my head. Like, I have to have everything together, and yeah, I have to be ready
for tough love.
Any questions? Yeah, yeah. You have to be ready for them to ask any questions, and, you know, to have them see yourself as a great candidate, no matter that other stuff, you know? And always focus on the work and your skills. Obviously, in an interview, you're there for your skills and for the work that you're going to do for them. It's not about you being international. So I always like focus on that as much as possible. And
then, I love that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So they see you as a equal candidate first, and then, oh yeah, there's some paperwork.
Right. And I like that you really mentioned the summer internship, not adding any additional paperwork for them, because, you know, I know in your experience and in other people's, a summer internship is the stepping stone to getting a full-time job a lot of the time. So, you know, getting your foot in the door that way with no paperwork required, they really get to know you that summer. There's a good chance, or a higher chance, than if you had applied blindly to a firm after. So it's a great time to build relationships. They could vouch for you and when they want to keep you after graduation. So,
yeah, yeah. You don't need to, you know, answer those things about, do you need a sponsorship, or like, you don't, those like online applications that you have checkboxes and stuff.
Yeah, not like a black and white application all of a sudden. Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah. And then in general, this is something that I definitely prioritized bigger firms, because in my brain, I was thinking that I was like, okay, I'm going to get an internship at a firm that will eventually be able to sponsor a work visa long term. Mm-hmm. That was the plan. So in my mind, obviously you can go about it different ways and you don't need to end up working where you intern, but it's all building up to something, and it's easier, right? If you're interning and you do a good job at a big firm, and then eventually after you graduate, they're like, okay, we want you. You did a great job in an internship. We'll do the visa thing for you.
Yeah.
Versus working somewhere else and then, or working for a small firm that can't afford to do it. Sponsorship.
Right.
And then trying to break into a big firm without having done an internship or anything there. Right. So in general, if you're looking for a sponsorship visa, I would recommend bigger firms that you know that they have sponsored people there, or that they've done it before, things like that.
We do have some listener questions that we can run through. So we're going to start off with how to find a sponsorship in architecture.
Yeah, that's the goal question.
Can you answer that in one sentence?
It's complicated. I mean, so everything that I've already talked about is taking you in that direction, right? So like, you know, interning somewhere that you know does sponsorships, or having those conversations early on, getting to know people that were sponsored or are currently sponsored at the current firm. So I think that don't waste your time, right, in like firms that are not going to do it. It's an expensive thing for a small firm. So it's probably not going to happen. So look for firms that do it. Establish yourself in the industry, in the city, in the network that you're in early on. So start working early. I think a lot of times they don't like international students as much because sometimes they don't have U.S. experience. Mm-hmm. So I think having experience in the U.S. before is crucial. like internship or working part-time and stuff. I think getting licensed is probably not going to hurt. You know, doing that, and you're a much more attractive candidate that way. Just research and trying to get in touch with people. And one of the things that I got as an advice during school for international students was, instead of doing these like online applications where you're just another person and you usually have to tell them that you needed sponsorship and you're international, so then, you know, automatically you're kind of like the second tier. Instead of doing that, you should interview them and try to contact people in the firms and just get coffee with them and ask them everything. And that, I was already kind of doing that in a way, but more like, hey, can we meet? I want to talk about opportunities at the firm. Right. Instead of like me just asking them like, hey, like, how did you get there? And not, they don't have to be international. It could be, you know, a connection from your professor that works mm-hmm. at a big firm that you want to work at. Just try to get coffee with them and try to be known aside from those online applications and getting your foot in the door through the back.
Right. Yeah.
Because the whole online application thing is very unforgiving.
For sure.
So those are my recommendations. I unfortunately, well, fortunately, didn't have to go through this process, but I was gearing towards it and I was going to do it. So, and the firm was willing to do it for me. And it was the case where I had interned for them. I worked part-time for them. And then by the time I got a full-time offer, they were willing to go through the lottery process and go through the visa sponsorship. But okay. COVID happened, and then I got married, and then everything changed.
So always be prepared for the unknown also.
Yeah.
Speaking of married, that relates to our next listener question. What happens at work after you marry a U.S. citizen? Which Maria just went through.
Yes. Okay, so we got married and started the green card process before my student visa expired. So this is going to be, hang in there, this is going to be a lot of information. But the student visa allows you to work after school for at least a year. So if you're doing a STEM degree, which our architecture master's was, you can get 2 years extended after the first year. So essentially I could work after school 3 years after graduation without being sponsored. So that's what I was doing in the meantime before I was going to do the sponsorship, but then we got married during that period. So I immediately like filed for the green card. So I got a lawyer. I started trying to do it myself and it was a terrible time. highly recommend getting a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And we basically just sent all of our information, all of my school records and everything. And I highly recommend like overlapping these things, like even if you're not planning to have a wedding until later, at least get the paperwork done so you can get the stuff started ahead of time, because I didn't want to be in a limbo situation where my student visa expired and my green card is not here yet, or right. my sponsorship visa is not here yet. And you really need to overlap these things because they're not timed well. Because, for example, like you can work after undergrad for a year, but if you start working in May, you need to stop working in May. So if you're going to grad school in August, what do you do for 3 months? You're illegal, essentially. Like, oh my gosh. It doesn't work.
Right.
So, yeah. that was another reason why I went to grad school straight after undergrad, because I could technically work for a year, but it didn't mean that I could work between the two. Right. There was a limbo time. So anyway, we overlapped that. So we started the green card process while I was still on my student visa. And literally, it was supposed to expire halfway through this year. And my green card came in like, what, April, May? No, June?
I think it was June. So honestly, like,
it was like a month before the wedding. Yeah.
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 The actual, like, have it done before your wedding, too, also. Like,
yeah.
You wouldn't be thinking about that when you're doing a thousand other things. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it took a year and a half. Yeah. A year and a half for the green card to come, which is insane. Once you're through the green card process, even before you get the actual green card, you get your work permit. And then that's a different thing because you have one. The card looks similar to the one you have when you were a student, but this one obviously allows you to work anywhere, anytime, and you can be unemployed. So one of the scary parts about being international and trying to find a job is that if you don't find a job for, I think it's 90 days, you have to go back.
Mm.
So, for example, like after COVID, once we graduated, there were no jobs and I had to find a job within 3 months or else. But then the border was closed, so I couldn't really go home. So I was like, okay, this is great. I don't know what's gonna happen. I just took it day by day, guys. It's fine.
Yeah. Ended up working out, but
yeah, I ended up finding a job. But you know, you have to be on top of this stuff because it will just sneak up on you. So definitely overlap things, and once you get that work permit, then you don't need sponsorship anymore, and you can work for a small firm if you want. And yeah,
it's huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's huge. You can work for Starbucks.
You can go find yourself for a year.
Work at a coffee shop. Yeah.
Go travel abroad.
Yeah, travel. So yeah, we went through a lot and pretty fast. And obviously I've been in this boat for almost 10 years now. So if I forgot something or if I went too fast on something, definitely like message us on Instagram or something and we can clarify some points if needed or go deeper into some of these topics. There's a lot to cover on this stuff, and we wanted to give a kind of a general step-by-step recommendations based on my experience. But if you'd like to hear from other international students or deeper into any of these things, let us know. But I hope that it was helpful and that it answered some questions or it, you know, clarified some things for you if you're in that process. Oh, overall, worth it, guys. It was definitely worth it.
I know I learned a lot from this episode. So
yeah.
I hope you guys enjoyed it. And as Maria said, DM us with any extra questions. But with that, you know, I think that's our international student episode. It was very informational, a lot of content there. So we'll definitely do timestamps by honestly phase of Maria's life. But yeah, thank you so much, Maria. This was great.
You're welcome.
And thank you to everyone listening. We love you guys. Thanks for sticking around. And we'll catch you for our next one. Talk to you then. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.